David Rousseau and Rick Cronick, thank you both for joining me today. Rick, let me start with you and ask, what was the impetus for doing this research?
I spend a lot of time, as many other people do, listening to politicians and policymakers say that Medicaid is unsustainable. And I was interested in trying to understand that argument. And Medicaid is very different from the Medicare program. In the Medicare program, the trustees of the trust fund every year produce a report that provides 75-year projections of Medicare spending and looks at the ability of the federal government to support that level of spending. There's nothing comparable in Medicaid. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Congressional Budget Office, as part of the 10-year budget projections, project Medicaid spending within that window, but there aren't any detailed long-term projections of Medicaid spending or a comparison of that with the ability of federal and state governments to support the spending. And I was interested with David in trying to fill that gap and to provide a view of long-term spending that policymakers could use in trying to understand what the future of the program might look like.
The projection extends out to 2045. Rick, why don't you start us off describing some of what the main findings were?
Sure. We found, and this is well known, I think, that Medicaid increased from 10% of health spending in 1975 to about 16.5% of national health spending in 2003. And about three-quarters of that increase was due to an increase in the number of people with disability who are on Medicaid. And as we projected out to 2045, we project that for the 20 years between 2005 and 2025, that Medicaid is likely to stay about constant at 16.5% of national health spending, and then increase very slowly to about 19% of national health spending in 2045. And this was kind of a surprise to us in that I went into this thinking that Medicaid spending would probably continue to increase as a share of health spending as it has over the last 30 years and perhaps even accelerate from its historical path as the baby boomers retire and need long-term care and as employer-sponsored insurance decline. So that projection of relatively flat spending as a share of national health spending was somewhat of a surprise.
And it was a surprise, and it's also a little bit counterintuitive when you do consider all the baby boomers who will be moving into retirement age. So why does it work out the way you say it does?
Well, on the long-term care side, we relied primarily on the long-term care financing model that has been developed at Lewin over the last 20 years by Lisa Alexi and colleagues, and supported heavily by the Assistant Secretary of Policy and Evaluation at HHS. And that model is a microsimulation model, so that it takes a group of people and ages us over the next 40 years and beyond, actually, and make some assumptions about how disabled we will be and how much money we will have. And there are really three pieces that are important here. One is that the model assumes that we, and I'm now meaning me, I'm a 50-plus-year-old baby boomer, will not be quite as disabled as my parents, and that I'll have a little bit more money than my parents, so I'll be a little less reliant and a little less reliant on Medicaid. But the main feature of that model is it assumes that the rate of growth of long-term nursing home per diem prices and home health care prices will go up at the rate of growth of wages, because long-term care is a labor-intensive industry with very little technology in it. And we've talked with many long-term care experts about that assumption, and most of these experts find that to be a reasonable assumption. And the result of that assumption is that since wage growth is much slower than healthcare spending growth, that even though there'll be more people using long-term care and more people using Medicaid-funded long-term care, that Medicaid-funded long-term care expenditures as a fraction either of total health expenditures or of the economy as a whole doesn't grow nearly or is projected not to grow nearly as quickly as the number of elderly using long-term care. So that's a big part of the long-term care counterintuitive finding. And then two other pieces. One is we are projecting that there'll be fewer people with employer-sponsored insurance and more children reliant on Medicaid. But children are very inexpensive to begin with and don't have much effect on total Medicaid spending. And all of our projections assume current law. Under current law, most of the adults losing employer-sponsored insurance aren't eligible for Medicaid, and so there'll be many more uninsured people in these projections, but not much increase in Medicaid spending.
Is it possible, by the way, to convert the approximately 19% in 2045 into dollars?
It is. In the paper, we convert it into a fraction of the gross domestic product, a GDP, which might be a slightly more helpful metric than dollars, because what will dollars mean 40 years from now? And we do project that Medicaid spending will increase as a fraction of the gross domestic product. Our main work was focused on projecting Medicaid as a share of health spending, and that's a very reassuring story. Health spending as a share of the economy is likely to continue to increase, and we rely there on work that's done at CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that projects health spending as a share of the economy. That's likely to continue to go up, and that will create fiscal pressure on state and federal governments. But I think the most probably important part of our work is that we compare the growth of Medicaid spending with the projected growth of federal and state revenues that would be available to support that spending, and conclude that both the state and the federal governments are likely to have lots of new money for things other than Medicaid, that Medicaid is not going to eat up all of the growth of state revenues, as I think governors sometimes fear.
Mm. David, if you can jump in at this point and fill us in on what your high-end scenario was in terms of the projections for 2045.
Sure. Using the same methodology that we employed for the baseline projections, we took a few of the key assumptions that we had and tweaked them to assume what we thought would be a worst-case scenario for how many more disabled might come onto the program and how many more kids and adults might lose employer-sponsored coverage. So you can think of it as basically taking all of our key assumptions in the projection model and assuming a worst-case scenario. And under that assumption, we found that Medicaid would grow to a slightly higher level of the overall health spending bill, but would still allow for states in the early years between 2006 and 2025 to have some real growth for services other than Medicaid. And in the out years, the situation definitely becomes a little more tight. But even assuming these, what we feel are really worst-case scenarios, there's still room in state budgets for real growth for other public services.
Rick, you touched on this a moment ago, but I'd like you to pick up on it a little bit more. And David, I'd like you to jump in also. And that is, what are the policy implications of this research? What do you hope the policy implications are?
Two main implications, I think. First, that Medicaid is not the Pac-Man that ate state budgets, as it is sometimes described, and that governors and state legislatures and federal policymakers have the luxury of taking a measured and reasoned approach to programmatic changes in Medicaid. We don't need to rush kind of headlong and make major changes in Medicaid because of the fear that it is going to bankrupt the public sector. That would be the first major policy implication. And then the second is that to the extent that we are and should be concerned about the future of Medicaid and the fiscal pressures that it will create, the main area in which we should be focusing is on the overall rate of growth of healthcare, not just for Medicaid, but for Medicare and for the private sector. That is, we need to do something about slowing the rate of growth of health spending more generally, which will also then have an effect on the rate of growth of Medicaid. But that there's relatively little that could be done other than throwing people off the program or slashing benefits that would significantly reduce the rate of growth of Medicaid spending over the next 40 years, other than changing the rate of growth of overall healthcare spending.
David?
And I would echo that. It's certainly been the case that Medicaid spending has been driven by enrollment growth in the program, and as a purchaser in a much larger healthcare system, Medicaid is subject to the same prices and often pays less, in fact, than other payers. And until we get a handle on how healthcare spending growth is moving forward in this country, there's really little that's special about Medicaid spending that differentiates it from the other payers.
David Russo and Rick Cronick, thank you both very much. The article is in Health Affairs.